That's exactly what it means.
Oh, I have a granddaughter. I've contributed to the college fund.
Chair notes the presence of a loosely assembled forum. pick up our business from before lunch. We will take up the TFW Policy Committee recommendations on Staple Slopes here momentarily. Before we do so, I'd like to have our customary after lunch general public comment period. So Patricia indicates that we have no takers. Going once, twice, and thank you very much. So moving on to TFW Policy Committee recommendations, public comment period on those recommendations.
Williger. I'm the senior forester with the Washington Forest Protection Association. I hope everybody had a good lunch. I'll be brief, but I wanted to highlight a couple of issues in the TFW policy recommendations. First, I want to say, again, thanks to DNR staff and all of the folks at policy that spent a tremendous amount of time on this, both technical and policy people, and came up with a pretty exhaustive set of responses to your board motion that you put forward in May. And so I'm just going to go down the list of the board motions and then talk a little bit about each one. And then I think Stephen is going to go into much more depth in this. So the first issue that you dealt with was asking us to take a look at the process. And I think that the process changes, and that actually aren't changes in the process itself, but changes in the transparency of the process, have been really good in this last 6 months, so that I think people have a much more thorough understanding about how DNR goes through the process of identifying issues, how landowners go through the process of developing harvest plans, and how that fits into the classification and approval system. And charting that out has been tremendously helpful. More information is required of landowners, which is something that DNR put in place when they ask for the slope stability assessment form that all landowners have to put forward with their forest practices application now. One thing that I think a number of caucuses have made comments about, although it's not officially reflected in the notes, is that there's a lot of information now that's required of landowners, but there doesn't seem to be as much information that is required of DNR in terms of outlining exactly why they made the decisions that they made. And so, again, that's something that we may need to talk about in the future. The second issue was gap analysis in terms of information sources available. And during your May meeting, there was an impression that there wasn't as much information out there as possibly might be needed. And I think if you take a look at this report, look at Appendix A, and the technical team in particular put together an exhaustive list of those resources that are currently out there, who has access to those, what kinds of scope they have. So there's really a good sense now of what information resources we have out there and where we might need to go in the future. So it's like a roadmap to where we need to go. It also highlights the fact that while LIDAR is an important element to this and a great tool, there are other tools out there that are also very useful in this process. Third issue, and I think Stephen is going to go through this pretty exhaustively, is that you asked for information about the mitigations or prescriptions from individual forest practices applications that have taken place over the past years related to glacial deep-seated landslides and the groundwater recharge areas associated with them. And Appendix B in your report highlights that. And at one point, there was a whole bunch of very tiny typed charts that were attached, and I think that that's been sent out so it's bigger. But what staff did was go through, and this was tribal staff, DNR staff, industry staff, environmental community staff. We went through forest practices applications back since 2011 exhaustively, and the tribes even went back to 2003 and found a subset of those forest practices applications that are dealing with these types of issues. Found that there were 24 applications that had that had activities on these types of features and put together a pretty exhaustive list of the mitigations that were involved. Keep in mind that this is compared with the total number of applications during that time frame, which is about 5,000 to 6,000 a year. So we're talking about a small number of these over the course of a number of years out of a large pool. Now, this may not be exhaustive. We did our best to get all the information that we could, but I think it's a pretty comprehensive list. And the thing that's really striking about these is that each one of them has extensive analysis that goes along with it. And I think that's what Stephen is going to talk a little bit about. And then the fourth element that you asked for was to look at the research strategy. And I'm just very pleased to report that UPSAG, which is the Upland Scientific Advisory Group, is going to be getting back together to be looking at how to put together a research strategy. And their first focus is going to be going to deep sea, the landslides and landforms. But then they're going to take a look at that mass wasting recommendation that you all approved in February. That was what was came out of the 2007 mass wasting study. And I think that it's going to be an excellent opportunity for us to make inroads in this process. Just wanted to say one last thing, and that is that the board manual group had hoped to look at a literature review and try to put together a comprehensive literature review, but they didn't have time. So one of the things that you'll see in your paper is that we are suggesting that the UPSAG and technical group begin the process of utilizing the $50,000 that you put in the budget this year to do that lit review. So, thank you.
Thank you. Stephen Burnett, would you please come join us as policy co-chair and walk us through the recommendations?
I want to thank Karen for giving my report. Anyway, is this on? What do I need to do?
You can introduce yourself for the record.
Yeah, for the record, I'm Stephen Burnett, and I'm sitting here at this point in time as policy co-chair, TFW policy co-chair. And I guess one of the things, is it gone? Technical failure. So one of the things I'd like to stress today is that the report in front of you is a consensus product. There was almost no argument over this during the course of the work we did. Everybody understands and appreciates the importance of the work we were doing on this. And so that's one of the things I wanted to bring out right away. So, after the board meeting in May, there we go, all right. One of the things, and what you'll see in front of you is a report, and one of the brainchilds of Adrian Miller, who couldn't be with us today, was to just structure the report to you around the board motions from the May meeting. But I'm going to talk to you about four things today, as Karen indicated. The completion of the process review of mass wasting that DNR goes through. The identification of gaps as far as information on glacial deep sea slides. Evaluation and mitigation measures associated with forest practices that have occurred and watershed analysis prescriptions that have occurred in the past, and then a review of the mass wasting research strategy as it is right now. So, first of all, you asked us to complete the process review in May. Process review in May, and that has been done. with two things that we have, we went exhaustively, and as you have seen at the previous board meeting, the DNR review flowchart on how mass wasting issues are dealt with as part of the regulatory process. We've reviewed, we had recommended last spring that a form be put together. That was put together by DNR staff and implemented. So the only two remaining issues regarding how we move forward regarding process review is a complete board manual. And making sure that the groundwater recharge area is addressed and that runout is addressed are the only two incomplete things. Now, as you notice, you adopted an interim process today on how to approach groundwater recharge areas. We hope to review that in more complete form when we get that in August this coming year. Your second board motion directed us to look at information gaps associated with mass wasting, in particular glacial deep-sea slide. As you know, there's a lot of geologic mapping out there, and we took a look at that. We think it's important that in the future everybody who has a need for that information, it's centrally located, and that where needed, that these information and so forth is included in the board manual. Aerial photos continues to be one of the highest need issues when you go out on any ID team, not just ID teams associated with mass wasting, and in particular glacial deep-sea slides. Having historic aerial photos available to look not just at present, what's going on, but also in the past, so you can look at how, how active might the situation might be, et cetera, is really important. So one of the recommendations we have for you today is to look at how we make those aerial photos more accessible, because there used to be a window out in the lobby out here where anybody could come and have access to those aerial photos. I don't know how people get to them now, but that is one of the concerns that we're bringing forward. The last one, of course, is all about LIDAR. Let me show you a map. And that's, of course, so the pink denotes the extent of glaciation in Washington. So this is a combination of maps from our report. So the point of this exercise for us was to look at information resources associated with glacially deep-seated slide. So the pink denotes where glaciation has occurred in the state. So as you know, there's glaciation out on the peninsula down through South Puget Sound, and then of course there's quite a bit over on the east side as well. The yellow denotes the areas of public. I don't see yellow.
Board members might note that you have a hard copy of this map in the packet.
With those colors.
Oh, good.
Corresponds to the colors.
Yellow denotes the areas of publicly available LIDAR. And what I will note, and is interesting given the budget presentation this morning, is that places where there is little publicly available LIDAR coverage in glaciated territory in the state is the Olympic Peninsula and Northeast Washington. So I just wanted to make that known. So the point is, when you put a map like this together, it helps us prioritize where we might see publicly available LIDAR coverage when we're looking at glacially deep-seated slides. So as I said, We want to incorporate more information sources into the board manual process. We want to improve the use of FPA level information. We've got the new forms. We're hoping that we'll actually be able to track the information in the new forms so that we can look back and see how we're doing on future FPAs that involve racially deep-seated slides, make sure there's a central repository for mapping information, and integrate all of this into the upgrade to FBARs for redevelopment. We also want to prioritize mapping of future GDSL. So, what does that mean? As you know, there was an effort coming out of Forest and Fish to do hazard zonation mapping. That effort was defunded about 5 or 6 years ago. We now have new tools, of course, like LIDAR, but there may still be a need to go out and do additional mapping. That was touched on briefly during Megan Duffy's budget presentation this morning. And we're suggesting that once geology IDs a lot of the existing sources, then our mass wasting science group can make some recommendations on how that can be aggregated and might help prioritize where the mapping needs to be done in the future. And finally, we think there needs to be continuing training around unstable slopes. For example, there is a need, as you heard from Ken Miller this morning, to make sure there's technical assistance for small forest landowners and to help them be aware of what it is they may need to do if they think they have one. Second, there historically has been a gathering of qualified experts, and that hasn't happened for a while. And we think that should continue or be restarted so that the qualified experts have a regular annual meeting to share stories, discoveries, new information, new technology, et cetera. And of course, more and additional ongoing training for anybody who's doing this work in the field, whether it's forest practice, forester, or other partners in the field. Okay, the third motion that you asked us to look at was evaluate the existing mitigation measures. And I actually like Doug Hooks to come up and join me during this part of the presentation. As you know, if a forest practice is proposed on a potentially unstable slope with the potential to deliver to either a public resource or threaten public safety, then specific mitigation measures or conditions must be designed to avoid accelerating rates and magnitudes of mass wasting. So what we did, two exercises, one of which hopefully Doug can help me out with if I get stuck. But the first exercise was reviewing existing forest practice applications that involve glacial deep-seated slides. And then we went into DNR's information. They found 13 in the last 3 years that they had record of. We then went out, because we thought there might be more, we went out and asked the tribes and landowners specifically and some of the QEs, or the qualified experts, to find more. And we came up with a total population of 42 FPAs over the last 10 or so years. This is not a complete census necessarily or sample of all the glacially deep-seated slides, nor could it be termed a scientific sample, but generally should be somewhat representative of the broad range of contemporary mitigation measures. So, we'll go on here. So out of the 42, there were 12 that totally avoided the slope and the groundwater recharge area. And so then there were also 6 that determined that the feature in question wasn't actually a glacially deep seated slide. Then the remaining 24 provided us with a sample of site-specific mitigation measures. Okay, so out of the 24, we had 13 that had some limited amount of regeneration harvest, either spatially or temporally. Six of those had partial harvest, like commercial thinning. Two were salvage proposals, and three did not fit into any particular category. What we found out of this, and I'll show you on the next bar chart, is that basically the sort of the bottom line for us is the level of activity, whether a slide was active, inactive, or the amount of activity proposed associated with that feature dictated what kind of prescriptions were put on the ground. So if it was a very active slide, it probably was avoided, that kind of thing. If it was not active, then some level of reasonable activity was proposed on the slide. And let me just stop right there, because this guy, the reason Doug is up here is he did all this work. And he knows the data inside out. And so I'd just stop right there and see if the board members have any specific questions around mitigation measures. No questions.
Questions for board members? Board member Stan.
I've got to ask one. What do you mean by regeneration harvest? This spatially or temporally? What's that mean on the ground?
Okay, I'll back up just kind of explain this a slightly different way, not that Stephen didn't do it accurately. Again, my name is Doug Hooks. I work for the Washington Forest Protection Association, but I'm here as a member of the technical committee for sub policy. And I love the way Nancy has described this before. Basically, the landowner is, this was described as a review of mitigation measures, but it was more or less a study of looking at what the landowner had done. They made a proposal, and then they were reviewed. They were trying to provide the rationale for that proposal, and then DNR was making a decision on that proposal. So it's more accurately kind of described as a proposal and a prescription rather than a mitigation. So there were these activities where we get, long story short, 24 of them, that there were actually something occurring on or around the groundwater recharge zone. So the proposals consisted of regen harvest, so you asked your question there. So that was saying that, say it was a 10-acre groundwater recharge area, I was looking at harvesting a certain area of that harvest. So by regeneration, I probably mean harvesting the entire clear cut within that 10 acres, so a percentage of the groundwater recharge area. And this temporally part might mean that I was doing it, I was doing a portion of it in year one and a portion of it in year 10. So it was an area of it that was divided like that. And so by silviculture, that would generally mean a prescription. So it's like a commercial thinning, I would be thinning from below, leaving the majority of the canopy there. Or perhaps it might have been coincidental with some wildlife management, where I may have been trying to produce some, say, spotted owl habitat or things like that, where I may be thinning from the middle range of diameters. It's called variable density thinning. So it looks more like a park when you're done. So that's what was referred to by the silvicultural part. And the salvage, there were only two. One of them, ironically, was around the Green River Community College, where you see the slide around the community college and some trails go through it. So they wanted to remove the snags that were a potential harm for public safety. So that's the proposal end of it. Would you just like me to continue? Other questions from board members? Proceed.
Okay. So the other thing we did, and I need to give a lot of credit to Kurt Bellicues and the Skagit Co-op, is there was a review of watershed analysis prescriptions, and so there was a review of the watershed analysis prescriptions. Very few of them, after we looked at all of them that potentially were in glaciated territory, very few of them actually ended up being on groundwater glacial deep-seated slides. Most of them focused on mitigating increases in water input to the slide. Generally, no harvest of roads was allowed on active slides, and in a selected few, harvest was limited to part of the groundwater recharge area. Road drainage was commonly addressed in what groundwater recharge area is. In other words, they wanted to make sure drainage off the roads went away from the slide, the groundwater recharge area, as opposed to into it. So outstanding issues around this. So one of the things that I'm sure Doug would tell you is that we did not evaluate the rationale around these approved applications or their effectiveness, okay? And we did not review the decision rationale or the associated CEPA documentation associated with these. However, they were all approved applications.
Was that because you didn't have time or didn't think it'd be valuable? Why?
Didn't have the information. Could have probably been gotten if we had more time, but it wasn't, and that sort of leads to another recommendation. So, for example, we think that it would be good if we continued this sort of ongoing, have our mass wasting science group periodically do a retrospective review of FPA's associated groundwater recharge areas. We think that would be healthy for the system. It goes to the comment earlier about adaptive management, looking how we put things in place and seeing how they work. Also, all the documentation available for CEPA currently isn't necessarily on FPARs, so making that readily available along with the new forms and so forth, we think that would be a good idea so that we can see how decisions get made.
It's kind of like that was an IT limitation. Is that correct or not? As far as what's included in the FPARs?
I would assume it'd be, yeah, either IT slash labor cost to actually scan.
Is that Mark or Chris, do you want to answer that?
No, that's exactly it. What we're looking at are fields in the FPA that aren't captured electronically, so we can't run a quick report. We'd have to look through each one.
I think this particular one, though, is about the amount of information on the CEPA documentation, for example, that's actually accessible when you log into FPARs and bring the application up. Is that, do you know if that's an IT issue or storage issue, or why do we do that?
I believe it's a storage issue. It's a huge amount of information. All of it's available at request, but not necessarily there when you access an application through FPARs.
All right. So the next piece, or the final piece I'd like to talk about just briefly with you, is you asked us to review the mass wasting research strategy with a focus on the glacial deep sea landslide program. So we revisited the existing mass wasting research strategy with particular emphasis on the glacial deep-seated landslides. And one of the things we found is that some of the studies that we had thought about doing back in 2006 to 2008, they were studies that would not, they were going to be expensive, but they wouldn't have provided any help on the certainty of the issue. And so that's why they didn't move forward at that time. So, however, glacial deep-seated slides are still a priority for us, and we're going to take that $50,000 that you allocated as part of the CEMER budget process this last spring, and we're going to take the work that the board manual group started, which was to identify a whole bunch of literature, and we're asking our unstable slopes group to begin finishing that work by doing a literature review. And, sorry, and we'll talk about that later on the agenda.
So my recollection is at the last board meeting, we had also talked about the prospect of a sort of core scale mapping exercise for Glacial Deep Sea landslides as one potential expenditure choice we could make from $50,000 that's in the budget. Did that get any further discussion, or will it get discussion in UPSAG? I felt like we were trying to decide between a literature review and its potential benefits to us and the mapping exercise.
So let me, hold on a second, let me get to my actual report. So there, if you look in a, particularly in appendix,
we love memos with appendices.
What's that?
We love memos with appendices.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. Okay, so
good job.
The initial, the technical group decided that we needed to do several things. One is do the literature review, complete the literature review, look at doing a retrospective to see how unstable slopes, you know, taking the extra step of the work on FPAs that have been done in the past and seeing what happened. So we didn't do that in this paper exercise that Doug did, seeing how we can categorize some of these unstable slopes, and then look at next steps from there. Specifically, classifying some unstable slopes. So the idea there was, as you can, you might draw a connection back to Doug's review of the FPAs. What these features actually look like may dictate what you can or cannot do near them. And so getting a better handle on classifying what a glacial deep sea slide looks like may help with that.
I can elaborate.
The, so, one of the recommendations came was for the CMR UPSAC to do the research review strategy, and Appendix D, one of their phase two options is actually to look at that and combine all the existing maps that are out there, lots of different data sources, now to combine that all into one.
So we'll have a more comprehensive picture of this following. How soon do we think we're going to stand up UPSAG?
Yes. Well, we're hoping UPSAG will be stood up this month.
Okay.
So, I mean, the technical committee, because generally, you know, we rely on the SAGs to set research strategies, so the technical committee took a first cut at what they think they ought to do, but now they want to hand it off to SAG, a new reconvened SAG that's being chaired by DNR.
That's helpful. Thanks.
Yeah.
Board Member Lord.
Thank you. Just to clarify, so you're looking at using the $50,000 for the phase one part of this project? Synthesis of literature?
Correct.
Board Member Sabine.
So I'm back on page six, and this is relative to one of your recommendations to the review of mitigation measures. You recommended that UPSAG and CMR consider doing a periodic retrospective review of FPAs. So is that essentially a review of effectiveness, or just a review to see what you can learn, or a review to see if the prescription failed, or there was a landslide associated with it when it wasn't intended to? And can you be a little bit more specific about what would be involved in that retrospective review?
I'm not going to answer the part of what will be involved, but yes on all the rest of it. Meaning that, yeah, I mean, if we're going to go down the adaptive management road, we want to look at those FPAs, look at what the decision-making was, and then figure out whether it was effective or not.
Okay. And then I have a follow-up question, thank you. So I didn't hear it mentioned, and I apologize if I missed it, but it looks like there is an errata sheet in our day of board packet involved in this section that edits page 2.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Correct.
So did you want to say something about that so everybody knows what the errata was?
It was a sentence that we didn't get consensus on. We didn't know that until after we'd already sent the memo to you. And that's all I can say. I think we had lots of discussion this morning about board management processes. And I'll leave it at that.
Other questions on the board? So, I'm trying to think of the what's next here, and I think I hear a pretty clear path forward on reconvening UPSAG and taking a look at the science part of this, some of the analytical questions that we've asked for some answers and review on the research strategy itself. I think that sounds like it's on track to me. Some of the others around piling information in some way are things that aren't, you know, solely the purview of the board, that I'm struggling a little bit with, you know, how we take action on, or if we take action on, or what that looks like, such as, you know, a centralized place for mapping resources, which I think you logically and correctly pointed out probably lies with Geology and Resources Division here at DNR. But I'm trying to, as the board, we're going to need to take a little bit of action on these recommendations and whether we accept them and move along and expect periodic report backs or whatever we end up doing. But some of these just are a little bit outside the board's wheelhouse. So is there discussion about that?
What we were hoping today is that you would accept our report. We definitely need to see some progress moving forward on some of these things. Some of these are not in our wheelhouse as well. And so we're assuming to some degree that the representative table, when we put these consensus recommendations together, thought in the back of their mind, okay, this means I've got to do something, or my organization needs me to do something. So that's what we're hoping for, particularly in regards to, you know, some of the recommendations and you know, DNR will have to figure out what is their capacity to actually put a centralized place together for many of these products. And then we would obviously want to continue to work with them on prioritizing where mapping occurs, prioritizing on purchase of LIDAR products associated with glacial beaches, slides, those kinds of things. And continue to monitor FPAs that come in on glacial deep-sea slides, and work with the department to look at those retrospectively.
Okay. Board Member Lloyd.
Thank you. I'm interested in the small forest landowner needs associated with this. And you pointed out, and was in testimony earlier, that there's an expectation of some help needed there for helping small forest landowners address, just understand these issues. And this very complicated board manual that we adopted today. But I'm not really sure what kind of training or what kind of assistance that might entail. Your recommendation is pretty broad, to be stated, it's not very specific. So I'm wondering what we can do, looking at the chair here, we might have some ideas on how we can get a more specific, detailed look at how can we help small forest landowners, and what is our capacity in that program right now, and do we need something more, and I'm not sure where we'd get that. I know there may be some grants or something. But anyway, kind of a strategy around this.
Was there any further specific discussion in policy about that subject?
Small landowners, like any landowner, needs to understand if they are near an unstable slope, or in specific case of the glacial beach slide, what the expectations of the landowner is if they're going to propose a an activity in or around. I think beyond that, if the, that person doesn't have expertise, which they're not likely to have, then hopefully DNR, through the Small Forest Landowner Office, can provide some technical assistance on what they can do or to help them understand the rule. Beyond that, we didn't discuss it. You know, this is always a hard topic for any of the agencies, because then you get into the question about what's appropriate assistance versus them hiring a consultant or something to help them figure out what they can do.
I think the training recommendation that was made around qualified experts and practitioners for separately begs the discussion about, you know, some small forest landowner assistance in the form of training. It's focused on stable slopes. It's been a fair bit of change on the subject for landowners in the last number of years here. And I don't know that the Small Forest Landowner Office necessarily directed a great deal of attention at regulatory assistance of late, because as Stephen points out, it's you get to a point where the DNR staff is writing information on FPA, which is kind of a line that hasn't been crossed in the past. It's a neutral place for the department to be. So maybe two things in response to your question, Board Member Ward, is to focus a little more regulatory-oriented training toward the small forest landowner community over the next period of time. And then secondly, I heard this morning that the Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee was going to have a discussion about the board manual itself. Perhaps that would be wise to have a bit broader discussion about the sort of unstable slopes environment in general. Two reasonable next steps that might come from this, although not necessarily possible. Other questions? Hearing none, entertain a motion to accept the recommendations of policy. We have a recommended text there. I also feel that we're going to need to continue to check in on this and progress report on this. We'll talk a bit later in the agenda about all the competing priorities that policy itself is juggling, but we need to stay after this. So do you have a motion to accept policy's recommendations?
Okay.
Board Member Stanley beat the buzzer.
I move the Forest Practice Board accept TFW's policy recommendations as presented related to unstable slopes, and the board requests progress reports at each quarterly meeting.
Second from Board Member Summers.
Probably going to vote against it.
For the sake of discussion. Further discussion on the motion? I'd just add that I think the intent of the board in assigning the multi-layers of work that we did to policy was to make sure that adaptive management was working for us on this set of questions around unstable slopes. Much like with the board manual process, people did an awful lot of very detailed work and very well-reasoned and good work. To perform, I think, most of all, a completion of the application process review, to have policy's eyes on that, even though it's a department responsibility around processing and analysis around applications, to have a stakeholder review of that is a really valuable thing. I think the board ought to take great comfort in having that depth of review on that, in particular that we have. And moreover, just to thank the co-chairs and participants in the technical group for their diligence and hard work on this on a similarly compressed time frame. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Abstentions? Thank you, Dylan. Our next order of business is public comment on unstable slope
information rulemaking. Tricia, have we undertaken? Thank you. Stephen Bernath, I'll sit down too quickly.
Different hat this time. So, Chair of the Board, Board Members, staff and folks, I'm Stephen Bernath again with the Department of Ecology. I'm just looking for my notes quickly. And again, you're in an interesting position in that most of us in the TFW committee saw a different version of a rule that we provided you comments on and didn't see the current version until it was sent out to all of us. And so I just wanted to let you know that we are supportive of this rule moving forward. I can't find what I'm looking for. However, there is a sense in there that I would suggest, and I don't want this to necessarily, oh, here we go. Don't want it to necessarily hold up the rulemaking, but the middle sentence that says the information shall include an explanation of how the qualified expert evaluated the proposed harvest or construction activities with respect to potentially unstable slopes or landforms, that's an unnecessary sentence in the rule. We can, and I would suggest that this can be dealt with as part of the rulemaking process or public comment, if you will. I'm concerned not only is it unnecessary, but it might constrain DNR's ability to ask for information on delivery, for example. So anyway, that's what I thank you for the opportunity to comment. Let me know if you have questions.
Thank you. Mary Scrivano.
I'm still Mary Spurlock with the Conservation Caucus. Regarding the rule, I just want to be very brief and be clear also that this is a revised version from what we commented on earlier, and we support adoption of the rule as it's presented today. I haven't had a chance to really think about what Mr. Bernath has proposed, but the way that it's written, I think we appreciate overall the need for this rule to clarify that DNR may request additional geologic information when it deems it necessary to appropriately classify applications. And specifically, this rule is consistent, and I think that language that was just discussed is also consistent with recent efforts by the department and the policy committee to increase transparency in all aspects of FPA classification and review. So having a specific requirement that there be an explanation for the rationale for the decision is really consistent with that. So with that, that's all I have.
Thank you. Karen Schwilliger.
Hello, for the record, my name is Karen Schwilliger with the Washington Forest Protection Association.
It only feels like the Forest Practices Association.
I know. Today especially. I'm very admiring of you folks sitting through all of this. It's wonderful. In terms of the administrative rule, WFPA also supports moving forward the rule at this point, getting it into the rule adoption process. This is CR102 level. This is fine work that's been done by the department as well as the stakeholders. We had at least one stakeholder discussion about this and had some really thorough talks about what this informational rule should be about. We are also looking at the modification that Mr. Bernath brought forward, and we'll be thinking about that. We want to make sure that this rule does several things. One is that it ensures very clearly that it's informational only, that this rule is focused on information. Secondly, not substance, so that it's not about the criteria for classification. This is about information required in the process. Once it crosses that line, it goes into a different type of rule. And then finally, we want to make sure that it's not prescriptive in terms of the form of geological information that might be necessary in the system. Sometimes a geological report needs to be done, a geotech report. sometimes a memo or a letter from the geologist to the science team geologist is what's sufficient to get the information in the system so that DNR can make the appropriate decision. And we want to make sure that those options stay alive. The only other thing that I would like to say about the draft cost-benefit analysis is that it speaks to costs for geotechnical reports of between $500 and $5,000. And I realize this is a draft document, but our experience is that it's normally about $10,000 for a regular geotech report. A $5,000 report would be very basic. And I've heard comments as recently as this morning of some costing upwards of $20,000. So we'll be making those comments in the rulemaking process. Thank you.
With that, Gretchen, would you please join us and provide some more information on the draft rumor? Yes, please also join us, Mark.
Good afternoon. I'm Mark Hagel with DNR, and I'm here to answer questions in the conversation after Gretchen's presentation.
Chair Everett and all members of the board, my name is Gretchen Robinson, and I work in the Forest Practices Division. I work in the Policy and Services section of that division. And I periodically come to the board to talk about the board's rulemaking projects and kind of usher the board through the rulemaking process. Today I'm here to request that the board direct staff to file a CR-102 with the draft rule language related to DNR's review of FPAs that propose activities in areas where potentially unstable slopes and landforms may exist. A CR-102 is the form that we file with the code revisor along with a rule proposal for the public review via the Washington State Register. The information we provide on the form is the reasons that our agency, which is the Forest Practices Board, thinks the rule is needed. And there is a place for hearing date and hearing location and also contact information for anybody that wants to ask questions about the proposed rule. It's one of the three rulemaking steps that agencies have to complete in order to adopt rules in the state of Washington. The first step is the CR-101, and that's a pre-proposal statement of inquiry, which is a public notification that an agency is considering a rulemaking subject. And the third step is the CR-103 when the rule is adopted and filed with the code revisor. Last May, the board began this rulemaking process by directing staff to file a CR-101 and also direct the staff to develop rule language. The language was to state that DNR may request additional geotechnical information for purposes of appropriately classifying a forest practices application where the presence of a potentially unstable slope or landform may threaten public safety. We developed language over the summer months, and this was at the same time we were working with the expert group for onboard manual 16, as Mark Radcliffe explained earlier. In September, we sent a draft to the policy leads for those caucuses review. And their comments were really very helpful at this early stage of rulemaking because it gave us ideas to consider while we were drafting a draft for your consideration. We believe the language before you today accomplishes your intent for this rulemaking activity, and we believe it's ready for the public to review. The intent was to create in WAC 222-20-010, that's the Applications and Notifications section of the rules, a rule that highlights the fact that DNR may require additional geologic information prepared by a professional with the appropriate expertise in order to classify an FPA in potentially unstable areas. This is very important because FPA classification is one of the primary tools that DNR uses to ensure a proposal may require that is thoroughly analyzed for any potential risk to public safety and public resources. We also believe that this clarification rule and the amended board manual will work together to help landowners support them where they'll have better clarity and rule that DNR may require this additional information if it's needed. And Board Manual 16 will support landowners with the guidance to prepare the information that DNR is requesting. In addition, we added a necessary change in WAC 2221030 subsection 5, and this is the CEPA, one of the CEPA WACs, where qualified expert is defined, and we amended it to explain that the term qualified expert is now in the applications and notifications area of the rule. And we also recommend several minor edits to improve the flow of the content within the applications and notifications rule. Also before you today is a preliminary cost-benefit analysis, which we produced pursuant to the requirements in the Administrative Procedure Act. It concludes that the rule would not impose any additional costs for landowners because this is already part of DNR's FPA review process to require additional geologic information prepared by a qualified expert if DNR needs it to appropriately classify an FPA. And it also concludes that the added clarity in rule may be beneficial to prospective applicants because it will serve to increase their awareness that they may need to supply such information if DNR cannot conclusively determine a classification with the information already provided in the FPA. If you approve this action today, staff would prepare for a possible rule adoption in February, if that's what the board desires. We would file a CR 102 with the proposed language, and it would be published in the Washington State Register early in December. We schedule a public hearing to take place in January, and we're thinking Olympia would be right here in this room. And the public comment period would take place from early December through early January. During the comment period, we'll of course welcome all comments and suggestions related to the rule and the preliminary cost-benefit analysis. And we all want to stress that any of the comments that the policy caucuses submitted to us early, and we did not put in the rule proposal, that we will welcome them to resubmit those comments and suggestions to us, and we'll consider them very seriously again. We'll summarize and respond to the comments in a concise explanatory statement, which is also part of the Administrative Procedure Act requirement. And that'll help the board to be able to understand staff's rationale for including comments or not including comments that we received in public comment period. And then we'll prepare the rules for the board to consider at their February 2015 meeting. So, to conclude, I request again that the board direct staff to file CR 102 with the language proposal before you today.
Any discretion and questions from board members? Hearing none, congratulations on an explicit and thorough explanation for the board. With that, I'd like to entertain a motion to proceed to 102 on a final adoption time frame of February. Do you have a board member interested in making such a motion? Board Member Balch.
I so move. I move the Forest Practices Board approve for public review the draft rule proposal amending WACs 2221030 and 2220010. These changes will inform prospective applicants that specific geologic information prepared by a qualified expert may be required to appropriately classify forest practices applications. I further move the board direct staff to file CR 102 with the Office of the Code Advisor to initiate permanent rulemaking.
Motion been made. I have a second. Second by Board Member Sweeney. Discussion on the motion? Board Member Sweeney.
I just wanted to thank staff and all the stakeholder participation to make it a relatively smooth process so far. Thank you.
Yeah. Other discussion on the motion? I might offer we do intend and hope to be able to arrive at final rule adoption in February. We want to specify that in motion, a friendly amendment? Not that we do. Not that we would rush the public process or anything, but I think we've learned a lot of work on folks thinking on this already. And it seems perfectly feasible for much of said question for us to make that. So maybe toward the end of that sentence we could add, I move, we amend the motion, to add at the end of that sentence, to initiate permanent rulemaking with targeted final adoption of the February board meeting. I have a second on the amendment.
I'll second.
Seconded by Board Member Lori. Moved by me, seconded by Board Member Lori. Discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, I call a question on the amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. Abstentions? Motion carries. Now moving to the original question on moving ahead to the CR-102, further discussion on the amended motion. Hearing none, I call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. Abstentions? Thank you both very much. Our next item of business, and we're grateful for y'all getting us back on the schedule, is to discuss the Policy Committee's work on Type F action items. Board members will recall that we resolved the dispute that had arisen from policy at our February 2014 meeting around Type F and the need for a permanent water typing system with a series of steps in one of our more elaborate motions, and subsequently we needed to realign our priorities. And so this discussion is to come back to that subject and re-examine the steps that we laid out at that time and understand where policy's thinking is on attempting to move forward on at least some of those, and we'll look forward to Steve's discussion.
So, hello again. I'm still co-chair of the TFW Policy Committee, and tomorrow our meeting was delayed because of other conflicts last week, so we didn't have an opportunity to discuss this. So, and we just got done with the unstable slopes. So our plan tomorrow, significant, probably one of the most significant agenda items for tomorrow's policy meeting is to discuss bringing Type F back on the plane, potentially Type N. We have a new CMER study that we have to make some decisions on tomorrow, etc. So I'm not sure that we ever were able to actually present this to you last spring. This is what we were going to bring to you in May if the events in March hadn't occurred, and it was actually a plan on how to deal with Type F.
Board members, this is in your data packet. It's a four-pager landscape. It's got a chart and the original motion from February. Thought it would be of use to go back and refresh your memory on that.
There were a couple of items for policy and an item for DNR in that board motion. Specifically, you wanted us to address electrofishing and off-channel habitat. And so we have a plan that we're going to dust off tomorrow. And then what we would like to do is bring that back to you and tell you about our progress, not only our updated plan on timing, but also on progress. Some of the issues that we were going to combine this with a series of both meetings and field trips. And so timing those field trips is going to be important. I also know that, for example, we were going to have an Eastside field trip, and the Eastside tribes, the UCATs, may have done some video because we weren't able to have that field trip, so we may be able to move some of these forward sooner than later, as opposed to waiting until the next fuel season. So we will be discussing exactly that tomorrow, as to what's ready to move forward and what's not, and come back with an adjusted schedule to you in February.
Thanks. And this, you know, the initial document, the one dated 3/2014, was that a consensus product of policy, or was it the sort of initial work plan? Necessarily undergo a consensus sort of discussion as far as the time frame and the steps beyond the motion itself.
I believe this was a consensus time frame. I'm hoping nobody came back and maybe will throw stuff at me. But yeah, we put a plan. Adrian and I, along with others, put a work plan together. This is it. Now we need to revisit it and move forward.
I'm just looking at these. I mean, there's some of these that you can do when it's raining, and others that you probably need to do when it's dry.
Correct.
I don't want you to get in front of your colleagues at policy, but you know, is this something that, given what we heard in the adaptive management report this morning about the number of studies that are on their way to policy, given the continued work that needs to happen around the stable slopes, where do you think we land on this? Is it another summer of this year, or summer of 15 type of a time frame, or do we really know yet?
I would hesitate to say that, but I will say that from my perspective as a co-chair, we need to be able to do multiple things at once. Most of the unstable slopes stuff that was on the report we just heard is a lot of that is in UPSAGS or the Mass Wasting Science Group's bailiwick. And so I don't see that conflicting with this work necessarily. So hopefully UPSAG can move forward with the research strategy and anything else we need technically from them, while we refocus on TIGAP potentially and any other study that comes forward from CMER. So I wouldn't see that as a problem at this point in time.
Mark, there are a number of DNR-centered tasks that were associated with this, in particular looking at the potential to reuse or modify the current water typing model and apply it to LIDAR data and some of the other technical things we thought were helpful. Where do we stand on those?
So last spring, prior to the board's meeting, the adaptive management program minister, Jim Hotfit, prior to his retirement, and I had looked into how the original model was run, all of the parameters and the design of the model. We're doing a lot of research and getting ready to try to determine a way in which we could accomplish the pilot as directed in the February motion. This process we stopped. The work, we need to kind of reinvigorate it. It's not, I would imagine Hans, when he comes on, will gladly take up this process. We'll work with Hans. We did get started, but we didn't get very far into the process. So we're going to have to revisit a lot of the parts of that and kind of reinvigorate the process. That is something that could be done as a parallel to all of the staff work and the policy work, but it needs to be picked up again. I would imagine, realistically, the window would be like the May meeting, knowing the starting time and the amount of staff work that we have going with other issues, I'm not sure when Hans will start. So, in addition to that, there is a lot of work that was required of DNR under the policy part of the motion. We did put together a west side field tour to look at off-channel habitat, but we're not in the optimal season to go out and look right now. But the tour has been set up. The DNR also prepared a lot of the PowerPoint presentations to to help accomplish these tasks. But as a whole, I think that all of the participants will need to kind of dust off the presentations that they had prepared, and I think Paulson needs to revisit our plan in order to primarily complete part one of the February motion. But I'll emphasize there is quite a bit of DNR staff work that is required to help accomplish this. You got a head start. I think we can keep up, but we'll just have to watch because there's a lot of other work that we're also doing.
Questions from board members of staff on what's going on with this issue? One that I know is a high priority for a lot of the caucuses, and it's a high priority for the department as well. Obviously, we need to focus on, we need to turn in the board's direction on the new meeting. We'll be picking it up again. I think maybe, you know, based on the work plan, sort of rough outline here, I just want policy to feel assured and Seymour to feel assured that we don't need you to come back and report in February before we get started on the actual stuff. Because I think this is a fairly well laid out plan. The motion is a pretty explicit motion. You kind of know what your task is. And our interest here, I think, is in just getting the work reinitiated and moving along. We'll look forward to hearing the progress report in February. But unless there's an objection, I don't think we want you waiting until then to tell us what the schedule looks like. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. We have as our next item of business public comment on the board's 2015 work plan. Ken Miller.
Good afternoon. Mike, this morning, there is a copy in your packet of my testimony. I got mixed up this morning. Representing small forest landowners, Washington Forest Protection Association. I'm here today to inform the board of our intent to present two draft alternate plan templates at your February 2015 board meeting. These templates will propose low-impact prescriptions for both the east side and west side RMZs. WFFA will respectfully request that you direct the Adaptive Management Program to review both templates and ultimately provide recommendations back to the Forest Practice Board. We respectfully ask that these actions be included in the board's 2015 work plan. WFFA is finalizing our draft templates and starting to discuss them with other stakeholders. Through these discussions, we hope to identify the pertinent issues for the Adaptive Management Program process. We appreciate that the board and Adaptive Management Program agendas are full. We hope that on this 15th anniversary of the Forest and Fish Law, the board and all stakeholders will commit to this first step to meet the commitments in RCW 7613-110. This is not to say that we haven't already been having a lot of positive efforts and help from a lot of folks in the past. I'd like to particularly give a shout out because I know we at least feel some love from these folks at different times. Mark Engel, Steve Bernath, Terry Jackson, Nancy Sturholm, Chris Mendoza, Adrian Miller, Marty Acker have all been helpful on different small landowner efforts in the past. We're going to try to lean on that again as we go forward here. But what will be first about this will be our first step in trying to do it the right way, with science and using the appropriate adaptive management processes. So if you have any questions now or later, WFFA representatives are available to work with any of the board members or other stakeholders to help ensure ultimate resolution. Thank you for considering our templates be added to your 2015, or 2015 work schedule. Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Twilliger.
Good afternoon. My name is Karen Twilliger with the Washington Forest Protection Association. This time. I promise this will be my last testimony of the day. I wanted to bring forward a couple of things in terms of the work plan that I just wanted to give a heads up to the board for, and then answer any questions you might have. This morning, the first one is that this morning Mark Engel, or Mark Ratcliffe, I'm not sure, maybe it was Chris, talked about the different studies that are coming forward from CMER. And the initial study that came forward to us is, we affectionately call it the BTO, the bull trout overlay, but it really looks at the difference between the all available shade rule and the standard rule in eastern Washington dealing with bull trout protection. That study has come forward to policy and we've had some discussions about it. And to date, there's been no action in response to that study. Landowners feel very serious about having a serious discussion about the science that's in that study because one of the key findings was that there is no statistically significant difference between the all available shade rule and the standard rule. And the CMER 6 questions that came back actually talked about the possibility of eliminating that all available shade rule. To date, as I said, we haven't been able to get to the point where we have consensus on moving forward on discussions about the shade rule, and I think it's a much more expanded discussion than just the bull trout overlay. But I just wanted to give you a heads up that if we don't get some consensus around doing something in terms of the discussion about this study going forward, we may be in a situation that we will have to invoke the dispute resolution process. I do not like that process. I think I've made no secret of that, but we may not have another choice if we can't get discussions moving forward, and that may impact policy's workload as well as the board's workload. Second thing that I just wanted to bring up, and we didn't talk this morning about cultural resources, but the Cultural Resources Roundtable is going through some extensive discussions about FPA conditioning authority and how that works with the plans that landowners and tribes put together. We haven't made a lot of progress on this issue, but it's something that will probably come back, at least in report form, to the board over the course of the next year. And we may be coming back and asking for some funds to do some facilitation so that we can get that process moving. And then the third thing I just wanted to mention and to remind folks of is that we started this morning with a discussion about budget, specifically the adaptive management program funding as well as forest practices funding. And I think that over the next 6 months, hopefully it'll be shorter, hopefully the legislature will go home in April, but there's gonna be a really significant need to have support for the funding packages go forward. And I think that needs to be a focus of some of our work. Second thing on this point is that although policy is finished with the majority of the unstable slopes issues right now in policy specifically, you still have a lot of people that are going to be working on the board manual discussion, whether it's within the agencies or within the stakeholder groups that are the same people. And so I'd really caution expecting, you know, too much from policy. We do best when we have a select number of items that we're working on and we get them done well. This last year, we did a fantastic job, I think, on the budget and the CMER work plan, as well as on this unstable slopes report that you just heard. And I think that loading policy up with too many things creates too much pressure and we just don't get things done. The last thing I want to say is that the forest and fish process is 15 years old, and it's like an adolescent, you know, like a teenager. And I think that, and several of my colleagues believe that we really need to spend some time reinvigorating that process to make sure that we continue to be science-based and collaborative. And I know that I'll be working with others to try and bring forward some ideas to make sure that that happens. That's it.
Thank you. Mark, would you please come join us so we can consider our 2015 work plan?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I'm Mark Engel.
the 2015 work plan. It's somewhat of a challenge for staff when we sat down and looked at the 2014 work plan and what we'll be doing again in 2015. In your packet, you have the draft plan that we put together for 2015. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. First, I'd like to start with, this is the meeting when the board also approves the meeting dates for next year. It means that we need to have a formal approval. So part of the conclusion of my presentation, the board will need to confirm the meeting dates for the next calendar year. Again, the rules do designate the second Wednesday of February, May, August, and November. However, in consideration of board member summer, we would propose that meeting dates as the Tuesdays of those months, which would be February 10th, May 12th, August 11th, and November 10th. When you look at the proposed work plan, it does maintain the annual and quarterly reports. It reflects the anticipated schedule for fall to bring recommendations from the completed SEMR studies and work plans to the board. And with that, I'm saying that we did modify the work plan to address all of those studies that both Chris and Amy presented to you this morning. It's a rather ambitious list. It's bigger than in past years. We show that policy bringing final recommendations for type F to the board at your November 2015 meeting. Now, that is a suggestion from staff. The board is allowed to make adjustments. We do not show policy completing the type N work. At one point, type N was the number one priority for policy. It has been pushed for other priorities, but it's not on the work plan right now. To remind the board, we need to have a recommendation from policy for a wet season methodology to locate the uppermost point in perennial flow in tight end waters before staff can complete the very first part of board manual section 23, the guidelines to locate the uppermost point in perennial flow. It also is the break between F and N waters. That will be an addition to that board manual when we complete the F process. But as of right now, there is no board manual section 23. In listening to the presentations today, the work plan does not show continued work from policy on unstable slopes. I do not know if the board would like to ask for quarterly update, although I believe the board chair has stated otherwise. It does not reflect any potential additional policy work around the bulk trout overlay, as Karen just pointed out. It does not reflect any work around the cultural resources roundtable for the next year. It does not reflect a request to be made to the board to amend board manual section 21 to add two additional templates for small forest landowners. The list does show four rulemakings, the unstable slopes rulemaking, which you have initiated formal rulemaking today through the directing staff to file the CR-102. We do have the RMZ clarification rulemaking, and we currently show that as August. That, to refresh the board, is actually as a result of compliance monitoring, where we found that individuals, when they ran DFC and they ran a series of segments, were confused in some instances and were combining all of the outer zone trees in one segment rather than the segment where they're supposed to be. So it's just adding clarification to the rule that the outer zone trees need to be within the segment that you've run DFC for. We also identified a CPAC clarification rule. That is to bring in sync the direction in Chapter 16 and the Critical Habitats Rules 222-16080
where if you do a special wildlife management plan, we call them swamps, you do need to have a SEPA that would connect it with the requirement that is in the rule in Chapter 10, and it would sync it up with the statutes, the SEPA statutes and associated rules. We also had requested early on a road maintenance clarification rule in recognition that formal RMAP process will begin to run out on October 31st, 2016, unless landowners had asked for an extension. But in any case, if you have roads that are completed that are up to forest practices standards, and in the event of some sort of a catastrophic storm or event where you would have a lot of road work required, it would allow DNR to meet with the landowner and sequence that road work so that it would be affordable to the landowner, and we would be able to prioritize the work based on protection of public resources. We also list four board manuals, board manual section 16. I don't need to say anymore, but continue work. However, the current schedule shows it is May. We will adjust it to August. Section 7, guidelines for RMZ, that would accompany the RMZ rulemaking. Section 23 is, again, to mean the completion of the type N work. However, we would need a policy to come forward with a recommendation to the board to allow staff to incorporate all of the methodologies to identify the uppermost planet flow. And section 22 is listed as well. That is there at a request of policy from last calendar year. There is a recognized need to amend Board Manual Section 22. That's the adaptive management board manual. That's only there because it's as a carryover. So with all of this said, I'd like to, I'm asking Tricia to pull the work plan up with some suggested modifications for staff. Could you make it like one, not two pages, just one, so it can be larger?
I don't be able to see that.
That's all right, we'll just go through. So staff has, since the board meeting, added some things that we've highlighted in yellow, or what's supposed to be yellow. For type F and type N, this is for board consideration. To add type N under policy work with an August date, type F with November, as I stated. Go ahead and scroll down, Patricia. Board Manual Section 16 has August date. Staff is recommending that you strike Board Manual 22 again. We do not have the capacity to assemble a stakeholder group to also develop that Board Manual.
Was the Adaptive Management Board Manual part of the was part of the rulemaking we did last year? Was that kind of the settlement agreement? I'm trying to recall what the context was for the Adaptive Management Board Manual.
At the time of the settlement agreement, we did have to go and amend Board Manual Section 22. The decision was made to only amend Board Manual Section 22 for those things that were pertinent to the settlement agreement and to delay the other amendments until we had the capacity to reassemble a stakeholder group. So all of the work that was required for the settlement agreement was accomplished in Board Manual Section 22. This is the additional work. Board Manual Section 23 is there with an adjusted date. That date would be 3 months after the policy report to the board. And then staff is recommending that we drop two of the three, or the four, or the three additional rulemakings beyond the rulemaking that the board has initiated today. And that is, again, in deference to the amount of work that staff has before them. So with that, I open for conversation with the group.
Questions for Mark? Or Narcity?
So do your recommended changes include consideration of Ken Miller's request to consider templates?
No, I did. That needs to be added. If the board chooses, this is the board's opportunity to make the adjustments prior to a final motion. So that would be a board manual section 21, and that's the alternate plan board manual.
So let's talk about that. I think the board hasn't done a lot of work on small forest landowner issues for quite a long time, and I think it's overdue that we return our attention to that. Obviously, there are very good reasons for the length of time it's been. I'm not sure we're well positioned today to decide whether that's able to be a 2015 work priority item, because I don't have a sense of how much work is going to end up being required in adaptive management and among the stakeholders, how much work by DNR staff. And at this point, I think we're better positioned to really evaluate that after we receive the proposal and have a bit more information about it, because it may be not very much work and maybe an awful lot of work. So I'm feeling ill prepared to add that, although and let the record show that, at least for my part, I think it's a subject we need to get back to. As you can see, though, we've got an awful lot of balls in there here. So we're going to need to make some hard choices about that.
But we can amend the work plan?
We can.
Later.
We tend to amend it at every meeting. Board members, Whitney?
Yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge the same thing for the benefit of the small forest landowner community, that I think it's a is definitely an important topic to revisit. You know, we've heard from the community before that they wanted some work on this, but I also think seeing it and seeing the process through which you've gone to, you know, come up with a draft proposal and maybe some advanced stakeholder work could, you know, limit the amount of time spent in formal board manual. So we're at a point where we feel confident that it could be adopted. So I just want the record to show Mr. Miller that we support the idea of working on that topic.
Other questions for Mark? Board member Stanley?
Just a comment to wholeheartedly support Paula's recommendation that if there's any way we can shoehorn the small landowner template in, when there was a law 15 years ago commitment, so.
I guess, and I still see us with a pretty big car accident coming our way, just between the volume of work that'll be needed for Type F and Type N. And maybe there's a way of the stakeholders and the adaptive management program and leadership in DNR coalescing those things and making it easier than I expect it to be, but I'm not sure we do both in 15. I think that'd be a pretty tall order to do both Type N and Type F in 15, although I'd love it if that were possible. So I guess for the purposes of the work plan, I'd like to see it stay on. We're going to need, though, as we come back into February and have a notion of how far along we are with F and what kind of work is going to need to go into F, and I think we're going to need to revisit that in February. Because I'm just not confident we can get it all done again. Other questions and discussion for Mark? Okay, Board Member Stewart.
I just want to put this notion out there, not that I think anything ought to change in terms of what we have up there, but our Fish and Wildlife Commission did just pass its hydraulic project approval rules. And so those are out there now, and I don't have a sense. I think I need to go back and sort of revisit how some of those, or if some of those, translate into the FPA world. And maybe at a meeting down the road, we can get a sense of, is that a 2016 work plan item? Are we comfortable with that, et cetera? So just to kind of plant that seed, we did pass those rules.
Okay. Mark, do you recall off the top of your head what our obligations are for hydraulic projects from the Commission of Absolute Rules?
First off, I apologize to board members, or that was on my list and I kind of went off. So I was going to mention that. The legislation or statute now requires Forest Practices Board to make changes to the Forest Practice Hydraulic Project Rules when DFW makes changes to the fish protection standards in the hydraulic code, which is WAC 220.110. I believe on Friday, the Fish and Wildlife Commission adopted a whole new set of hydraulic code rules. So we will have to review those rules and review them to determine if there has been a change with the fish protection standards, which would require the Forest Practices Board to undertake additional rule making.
Is there a time frame that we're staff, DNR, is required to kind of evaluate the fish protection standard changes, which is a little bit for everyone's benefit. It's a little bit of a, I don't know, it's a term that doesn't really exist. It's a sort of subjective to go through and understand what's a fish protection standard and what is it.
Right. There's no time frame. It's just that we have to undertake the review and we have to make changes accordingly. So there's no, no specific time period that has to be done with it.
Thanks, our sincerest thanks to the commission.
I'll take that message.
Further discussion on the work plan or questions from Mark? Hearing none, I'd like to see a motion to approve the work plan as edited by today's discussion and decisions. Have such a recommendation.
I move Forest Practice Board approve the 2015 work plan as presented today.
Second. Motion's been made by Board Member Lori, seconded by Board Member Balish. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, as our most consequential item of business for the day, I would call a question on the work plan. Approval of the work plan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Abstentions. Motion carries. Thanks, Mark, very much. And we'll look forward to continuing to juggle our competing priorities. Miraculously, we are back on schedule. We have Mary Berner, a deputy supervisor with DNR for resource protection. I see John Kuykin, who's the assistant division manager, in the back of the room today to talk about 2014 wildfire season impacts and our forest health plan or assistance work. This was at the request of board members at our last meeting to just sort of overview fire season. And since we're a little bit ahead, I don't know about the rest of you, I can use about 5 minutes. So why don't we get the presentation set up and we'll come back here at scheduled time 35 minutes after the hour.
Yes. So. Yeah. Time right after lunch.
Oh yeah, I want to take a siesta.
All right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, after you said his recent in the comments, I was feeling like you're 51, yeah.
Yeah, well,
for this afternoon, with everyone he missed out.
I guess I need to catch all this.